Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a program that explores the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and the other stalwart in the room is engineer Jonah DeGeest. Hi, Jonah.
Hi, Greta, and hello to you in radio listening land.
Jonah, did you see that super-duper moon eclipse last night?
Yes, I did. It was quite the sight to see.
Evidently, this was a historical eclipse combining a harvest moon, a total eclipse, and the point in the moon's orbit closest to the Earth, or at its perigee. And this hasn't occurred for 33 years, and it won't occur for another 18. That means the next time this happens, Jonah, you will have a career or a family or both. Or you'll be like me and have neither. Let that be a lesson to you. Well, it's a new week and practically a new month. And first up on our agenda, our studio guest, Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, is going to tell us what October holds for the city of Ames. Hi, Allison.
Good morning.
So what's up for Ames?
Well, we have a full calendar of events, and I'll highlight a few, but also just let everyone know that our full calendar is available on our website, visitames.com. And so if I mention something and you want more details, you can always go to our website.
Great. And we'll get to that in a second. Just want to say that later in the show, we will be joined by a distinguished recent graduate from Iowa State University who is back to present a lecture tonight as one of a select group of social change entrepreneurs identified by the United Nations Population Fund. Our guest has received a grant to build a movement for gender violence prevention in her country, Sri Lanka. So that's something to look forward to. So, continue, Allison. Where are we?
Sure. Well, there are a number of performance events throughout the month, both theater and music. Starting on Thursday, Narek Artunian is going to be in Ames as part of Iowa State's Martha Ellen Tai Performing Arts Institute, and it's the Young Concert Artist Series. And so he will be in town today through the 30th in doing lectures and demonstrations and a master class. And then there will be a performance on Thursday at 7:30 in the Martha Ellen Tai Recital Hall.
And he's a clarinet player.
Yes, clarinet.
Cool.
The ISU Symphony Orchestra will perform on Friday at 7:30, again in the Music Hall at Iowa State. And this will be a concert celebrating the 40th anniversary of the University Museums. And we've been celebrating that throughout the year with a number of different events.
That's right. Okay. Tchaikovsky is on tap for that.
Yes.
That's wonderful. I love Tchaikovsky.
The Central Iowa Symphony will do their Symphonies of Song on Saturday the 10th at 7:30, and that's at the Ames City Auditorium.
Oh, Central Iowa Symphony.
Yes.
The all-volunteer, or mostly volunteer.
Right, correct. Wonderful musicians here in our community. And the Ames Town and Gown will have David Finkel and guests performing on Sunday, the 25th at 7:30 at the Ames City Auditorium. And that will be an all Beethoven program.
Okay.
Live music continues at Snooze Hill Friday evenings and Sunday afternoons, and that's Snooze Hill Winery over near Madrid. Rachel Platten will be in concert on Wednesday, October 28th at the Memorial Union, and she is the singer-songwriter who sings the popular fight song, and she'll be here at the Great Hall on Wednesday, October 28th at the Great Hall of the Memorial Union. Actors is doing their final show of Nonsense on Saturday, this Saturday at 7:30. And this performance is going to be in the Grand Opera House in Story City. And that'll be a very unique location for them.
Yeah, I know that the Ames performances this most recent weekend and then the one before were sold out.
Yes.
And so this is a chance for those of us who were a little sluggish getting our tickets to actually go and see the show.
Right.
Which I heard is great.
It's a wonderful show, and they now have their online ticketing open for people to buy tickets online at actors.com.
So that's at Story City in the Grand Opera House. Neat.
ISU Theater is presenting Treasure Island, and they will kick off this weekend as well, and then they'll also have performances next weekend. And, of course, that's at Fisher Theater. Okay. Commotion Dance will be doing their fall concert on Friday and Saturday, October 23rd and 24th, and that will be at Ames City Auditorium. And we,
Valerie told me, Valerie Williams, the director of Commotion, told me that she's getting back to some of her electronic kind of feedback
Wonderful.
Sorts of compositions with that performance. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, and she's calling it catching up.
Right.
The Talent Factory over in Nevada has a number of different wonderful performers coming in. They have Haywood Banks on Friday, October 2nd, and Louis Anderson on Sunday, October 25th over in Nevada. And the Iowa State Center is kicking off their season at Stevens this Sunday with 42nd Street, and they'll have a performance at 2 o'clock on Sunday, and then they'll have the Chamber Orchestra Kremlin on Thursday, October 8th. They'll have Little Big Town on Friday, October 9th, and Hot Sardines on Sunday, October 18th. And one of my favorites, Nora Jones in concert on Friday, October 30th.
Okay.
So that, along with their youth matinees, Caps for Sale on October 15th and I Am Jack on October 27th, it's going to be a busy time over at Stevens Auditorium.
Yes, and it's very very diverse as well.
It is. It is.
Try to put all those in one sentence or one page. It looks a little funny.
It does. Of course, it's football season at Iowa State, but it's also soccer and volleyball. So there are a number of Iowa State volleyball games on tap at Hilton Coliseum. And the soccer team plays at the ISU Sports Complex. And before the games, you can always check out the Cyclone Central tailgates at before the football games at Iowa State Alumni Center. And don't forget that Friday the 30th and Saturday the 31st is Iowa State homecoming. So there'll be lots of activities going on over near the stadium as well as throughout the Greek community and on Central Campus that week for homecoming.
Okay. What weekend is that again?
That is October 30th and 31st.
Oh,
at
Halloween.
The end of the month. Yes.
Oh, great. So yeah. We'll have homecoming. We'll get together with Halloween. And do they have floats and so forth? Parades?
They have lawn displays at the Greek houses. So there will be, on Friday evening, walk through the Greek community and see all of the lawn displays, and a lot of them move and have special effects, and so that's a great part of the homecoming celebration.
Okay.
As well as a big pep rally at the Alumni Center on Friday evening.
Okay.
Yes. A few other great Iowa State events that are happening with student organizations. We have the Cyclone Stampede Rodeo next weekend.
That really surprises me. I did not know that Ames was the home of any rodeo.
It is. And the Hanson Ag Learning Center is the home now with the indoor arena that they have there at the student Ag Student Learning Center on Mortensen Road.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And this is a student club. And they will bring contestants from several Midwestern states, and they'll have about 300 contestants in town that weekend. So you can stop over and see all kinds of different rodeo events Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They start Friday evening at 6 o'clock with barrel races, and then they'll continue with events all day Saturday and Sunday. And we also have, at the Student Learning Center, the Bacon Expo.
Uh-oh.
And that is on October 10th. You want to take advantage of that. It's an event dedicated to expanding the horizons of bacon lovers and educating the public about bacon in general. It is a student-run event, again, and it's a great opportunity to get out, and I think they'll actually have some animals there as well. Another great student-run event is Run for the Roses, and this is their 29th annual Run for the Roses. It's a 5K walk-run, and it is organized by the Ames Area Running Club and then the Women of Alpha Omicron Pi, and it is a fundraiser, their philanthropy for the Arthritis Foundation.
Run for the Roses.
Yes. And the connection with the roses is the flower of Alpha Omicron Pi is roses. And at the end of the race, everyone that finishes receives a rose.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yes. So that takes place at the Ames Middle School. And then we also have the Student Vet Med Club is doing a Vet Med Expo and Open House, and that is on Saturday, October 24th. So it's an event open to the public, and it's free, and it will be at the College of Vet Med, and it'll include exhibits and presentations on animal health and tour of the vet hospital, demonstrations, and then also a 5K run walk that will benefit canine brain cancer research.
That's quite interesting. I didn't know there was a canine brain cancer research. My dog's losing his brain, I think. I don't know whether it's cancer or some other.
Well, maybe you ought to get him over there.
It's certainly a wonderful resource that we have over at the Vet Med College.
It is, yes.
If you want to spend the money on your pet, you can extend its life as long as possible.
That's for sure.
But that one's a 5K run, and yes. Then the Run for the Roses is a 10K run.
Yes, and there's also a 5K walk if you want to do only five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then they also do a kitty race, too, so... and I don't know if you realize, but the Cyclone Cinema puts on a free movie for the public every weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings at 7 o'clock at Carver Hall. And it's open to the public, and it's free. And they'll be showing really recent first-class movies. They're showing Ted 2. They're showing Magic Mike XXL. They're showing Mad Max, Trainwreck, and Minions. And that's each weekend this October at the Carver Hall.
Wow, and these movies are, as we say, no ticket required.
Exactly. Yep.
And so that's kind of nice.
Yep. And the auditorium in Carver Hall is a very nice location to do it. Big screen, comfortable seats, and open to anyone who'd like to take advantage of the opportunity.
Okay. Ted 2, Magic Mike, Mad Max, Trainwreck, and Minions.
Yes.
Lots of M's in there.
Yes. We've got lots of outside events. It's
of course.
It's that time of year.
Yeah.
The Arboretum is doing an Arb Bark, and you can bring your pet out on a Saturday morning. That's this upcoming Saturday. And
The Arboretum.
Yes, that's over near Madrid.
That's what I thought.
Yep.
I was like, well, this is not Ames strictly.
No, we cover all of Central Iowa at the Convention of
Business. Well, so do we, so that works out well.
Yes. They have a number of different Saturday morning programs. They'll also have Plants and Stories with Joe McNally on Saturday, October 10th. And they'll have a nature drawing series, and that'll be on Sunday the 18th. And it's the Arboretum is a wonderful setting for those that like to draw. Story County Conservation is having their Partners Fall Festival this upcoming Sunday, the 4th, from 3 to 6. And they will have music from artist and writer Chad Elliott. They'll have lots of crafts and nature activities. And they'll be doing a barbecue as well. So it's open to everyone, and they will be doing it rain or shine.
Here's one that captures my attention, the Prairie Seed Harvest.
Yes, over at Doolittle Prairie. And that you can collect prairie seeds, and then they'll give you some information about what they are and where to plant them around where you are.
Oh, that's excellent. So you can get your own prairie seeds by going and collecting some.
Correct.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yes.
And that's October 8th. That's a Thursday between 4 and 6 p.m.
Yep, at Doolittle Prairie. They're also doing a program on spiders, super spiders, on Thursday, October 15th from 6:30 to 7:30.
That sounds like a kids' event.
It is, yes. And they will, they have a naturalist who they call their spider geek, Rebecca Beal, and she will be helping you discover all kinds of things about spiders. Lots and lots of Halloween events.
Okay, before we get into those, let me just identify you again. This is Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, and her job is to stay on top of all of these amazing events that our community puts out and produces. And you can find all of these events at visitames.com, correct?
Right. Our website is visitames.com, and on the front page there you'll see a link to a few events, but then also a link to see the full calendar.
The full calendar. Yes. Okay. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio.
Yes.
Okay, Halloween.
Halloween. As we mentioned, it's not just Ames, because we also have the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad in the area. And they do their Pumpkin Express train this time of year, where you can ride the train out to the end of the line and pick pumpkins at their pumpkin patch. And that will be Saturday the 10th, Tuesday the 13th, Wednesday the 14th, and again Saturday the 17th. The Iowa Arboretum does a number of Halloween events, including a pumpkin carving and chili supper. They do Arboween, which is kind of hard to say, and where you bring your favorite superhero or princess and join the parade of, they'll have scarecrow decorating and pumpkin decorating, hay rides and a hay maze. And that is on Saturday the 17th, and that's from 1 to 3. And then in the evening, they do their Arboo Scare. And as the sun sets, some events begin for a little bit older children, and they'll go on into the evening. So bring your flashlight. And that, again, is Saturday the 17th, and that Arboo Scare is from 6 to 9. We have Halloween Hides and Creepy Caches at McFarland Park on Friday the 23rd.
Halloween Hides and Creepy Caches.
Yes.
C-A-C-H-E.
And that's as in geocaching.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
And so they'll do a geocache hunt for Halloween. So you bring your GPS and you get some coordinates and you try to find the hidden geocache prizes.
Okay. The hidden treasures are jack-o'-lanterns.
Right. Exactly.
The trails are so dense with trees. That would be very good.
It will
spooky.
Be fun. Yes. And it's an evening event, of course. Ryman Gardens does their Spirit in the Gardens. And that is Saturday the 24th from 4 to 7. Iowa State, the museums always does their ghost stories of Iowa State. And so you can learn a little bit more about the legends and the haunted stories about Iowa State. That's Thursday the 29th at 7.
And where is that?
They start at Morrill Hall, but you will be walking around campus and learning some of the different.
Oh, a tour of haunted buildings.
Haunted buildings on campus. Yes.
Huh.
And, of course, there's trick-or-treat in both Ames and the surrounding communities. And Snooze Hill always does a costume party. So if you're an adult that loves to get dressed up and have fun at a costume party, that'll be Saturday the 31st from 6 to 10.
Will there be live music at that event?
I would assume so, and maybe a little wine tasting as well. Yes.
So, actually, Halloween is Saturday.
Saturday evening, yeah.
And are the communities having the Halloween trick-or-treating on Saturdays?
The Nevada one is on Saturday evening, and I believe, and it's not on here, I'll have to be sure I get it on there, but I believe Ames is doing it on Friday evening.
It's just like their July 4th
exactly. We like to do everything the night before in Ames, don't we? Oh, shoot. Ames, I don't know, what am I trying to say? Ames Area Art. Ames?
Oh, yes. The artist's open house.
Yes. ACAC, Ames Community Arts Council. Thank you. Okay, got it. Is doing their art tour, studio tour on October 10th. And that'll be throughout the day. And everyone, you get to view the different studios and their and see the artists at work for that event. And so that is Saturday, October 10th.
That's always a special event.
Yes.
So I understand that Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau has a grant program.
Yes.
Currently. Can you tell me a little bit about that before we sign
do.
Off?
We set aside 5% of our hotel motel tax income into a special fund, the Community Grant Fund. And then this time of year, every year, we accept applications for events that will be happening next year. And so you can apply for funds to help promote your event in 2016. There is an application on our website right on the homepage. You'll see a link to the Ames Community Grant Fund, and the funds will be available for next year. So think about events that your organization will be planning for next year and how we might be able to help you with some funding for that.
And typically, how many different groups get funded through that?
We've done over 200 events in the last 10 years, and almost $500,000, almost $500,000 in funding. And each year it varies, but probably around 20 events each year. And I think we're going to have around $60,000 to give away this year. So,
well, that's a great resource.
It is. It's a very easy application process. So take a look. If you have questions, you can call our office, 232-4032, and we'll be happy to walk you through some of the information and answer any questions you may have.
Well, Allison Walter, thank you so much
coming
down to the station, as you do every month, to give us the update on the many, many events that we can't possibly keep up with ourselves.
Yeah, yes.
You're listening to Local Talk, and I'm your host, Greta Anderson. Later in the show, we will be joined by a special young guest from Sri Lanka, a woman who is making waves in her country just a couple years after graduating from Iowa State. But for now, I bring you a radio essay on the Muslim celebration of Eid al-Adha. When it comes to Muslim holidays, most central Iowans have heard of Eid al-Fitr, the feast that takes place the day that the month-long fast of Ramadan is over. But that Eid is only one of two special feasts, or Eids, that Muslims celebrate during the year. This past weekend, Muslims in central Iowa and around the world were celebrating Eid al-Adha, a four-day holiday associated with the end of one year and the beginning of the next. It always occurs two or so months after Ramadan. Eid al-Adha is associated with the Hajj, or ritual pilgrimage to Mecca, which unfortunately made the news this year with the trampling of hundreds of celebrants. But this pilgrimage is a one-time event in a person's life. So what does the average Muslim do every other year when Eid al-Adha, or the Feast of Sacrifice, rolls around? They celebrate with their families and their communities. Here is my 17-year-old Egyptian exchange student, Nadia Abdelazim, describing her family's practice.
The day before the feast, we fasting. We don't eat after the first prayer, Fajr prayer, and we eat after Maghrib prayer. So all of the day, no eat, even water, no drink, no anything, all of the day fasting. And
what is the purpose of this fasting? Why are you fasting?
If you make something wrong for all of the year, the God remove all of these bad things you do in this day when you're fasting.
Then what happens after you've eaten that meal, after the Maghrib prayer, the evening prayer? Oh, what do you and your family do?
After eat, they watching movie or all of the family sit together talking, the kids play, just talking and playing and sit together to the next day some people go to in the street and celebrate in the street. Some families stay at home and celebrate together.
All night long?
Yeah. The next morning, usually at 6 a.m., we go to the mosque and pray. And after pray, we have a meal. All of the family sit together and eat the meal. And just celebrating, we have a feast today. Get out, go to, some people go to vacation for 4 days. And some people go to new places in his city, in them city, they don't go before. Like the zoo, they go to the zoo and the kids play and they talking, yeah.
Okay, so what's your favorite thing about Eid al-Adha?
Our favorite thing, to join in a mosque with the people who in the mosque and prayer together. Actually, in Egypt, we, after prayer, sit with my friends in the street, playing and talking, make something funny, and after that, go to home.
So many Muslims in central Iowa are separated from their extended families. Moreover, they have jobs or classes to go to, so they cannot take the day off, much less take a 4-day holiday. Nadia took me to the mosque on Iowa Street in Ames, otherwise known as the Darul Arkam Islamic Center, to witness the prayer service at 8:30 on Thursday morning and to join the feast after the evening prayer at 7:30 on Saturday night. So they broke up the important prayer and then the feast that occurs after the prayer. So we got there early and entered the door to a small room where the women worship. The service in the men's worship hall was being played on the closed-circuit TV. One by one, women entered, sometimes with their children, and always in their very finest garments. It's hard to describe the beauty I witnessed in the prayer room. With glittering gowns and colorful scarves, it was a feast for the eyes. Women of all ages, clearly from all over the world, with a beautiful array of skin tones and facial features, made this the most diverse religious celebration I had ever witnessed. I wanted to ask each one their story, but of course I could not. I could only imagine the diverse traditions and journeys that brought them to this one building in Ames. A separate room was available for women who were pregnant, who were menstruating, or with noisy children. It was there after the prayer service that I asked some of the women what this holiday meant to them.
I'm from Togo, so I'm happy for today because it's a big day for us, Muslim. I'm so happy for this day.
But it's commemoration of Prophet Abraham. And usually a lot of Muslims, they will sacrifice an animal around this time of year because that commemorates what Abraham had to go through with his son, Ishmael.
Because everybody's from a different country, a different region, you can see different styles of clothing. Some are more elaborate than others, but this is where we wear our special dress. So Eid is always a special time to wear your best dress, your new dress. This is going to be my 3rd year doing this. My family's from Laos. It's just a blessing for all of us to be able to get together, and this is a very good community in Ames.
The Sunday school teacher, Nerman Sabri, filled me in on some of the history of the celebration.
It all revolves about the story of the Prophet Abraham, or Abraham. He's an example of the complete submission to the will of God, of Allah. So there is like many examples in his life why he had to submit to the will of Allah and how he did it. And this is an example for us. Like when he was ordered to take his family and leave them in the desert in the middle of nowhere for the purpose of establishing a society in this area. And because God knew that this is the place of the holy house, so he wants Sayyidina Ibrahim to go and establish the life there and start to rebuild the house of God again. So he took his family and they start to have like a city and start to build a life there. And then everyone start to come and perform this pilgrimage. And the Prophet Ibrahim was tested again when Allah ordered him to slaughter his child. not for the purpose of slaughtering a child, but, you know, to see if he will obey the will of Allah or the order of Allah. And when he saw that he's submitting and he's replaced this by, you know, a sheep instead, to show people that you are willing to obey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, even with the something that it's so dear to your heart. Because we know that this son, he got his son after years. His wife did not bear children. So once he had a son and he was ordered to slaughter him, it was like extremely hard for him. But, you know, it was only a test. And this is the same thing in our lives. You know, we are tested in many things. So if we bear and endure some patience, Allah will reward us. So this is what we believe. And we try to pass it to our children to see, you know, that this is what they understand. It's not like this is something, a ritual that it doesn't have any background. No, it is just to remember this and to be a lesson for us, you know, to do the same thing if we are facing the same situation.
Nadia and I returned on Saturday to enjoy the feast that had been scheduled. The food was catered from a restaurant in Cedar Rapids and can best be described as Indian food, with flavored rice, curries, and naan. The women and men occupied separate, crowded rooms in the basement. The small girls in their beautiful dresses were clearly wound up, energetic, and shouting with excitement. Someone explained to me that these youngsters get together this way only at feasts. Children are often left at home for regular prayer sessions. They were especially excited because they knew they would be receiving toys, which are handed out to the children after the feast. And the food, by the way, was delicious. I went home dazzled again by what I had witnessed. How lucky we are to have this institution in Ames, which, because it is the only mosque, is accepting of various Muslim traditions and welcomes such a diverse range of congregants. I met more than one recent convert to Islam. My exchange student, Nadia, thanked me for coming with her to these two celebrations of Eid al-Adha. But in the end, it was I who felt privileged to get to see inside the Darul Arkam Islamic Center and encounter its warm, welcoming community. And that was a drum roll by a percussionist from Sri Lanka, the country where our next guest hails from. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. And for those of you who need a geographic refresher, Sri Lanka is the nation occupying the large island at the southeast tip of the Indian subcontinent. And we are going to learn a lot more about Sri Lanka in the next few minutes. Our special guest is Onali Ariyabandhu, a recent graduate of Iowa State University. She triple majored in economics, international studies, and environmental studies, graduating in spring 2014, and was the president of the International Student Council. I just learned that she also led a study abroad trip to Sri Lanka while she was still an undergraduate. Just a year and a half later, having returned to her home country, Sri Lanka, she has been designated a social change entrepreneur by the United Nations. And this is a pilot program, the concept of social change entrepreneurship, that is taking place in Sri Lanka, in her country, and she is a major part of it. Quite an accomplishment. She'll be speaking tonight at 8 p.m. in Memorial Union on campus. Welcome, Onali.
Thank you very much.
So, Onali, can you give me and the listeners some background about Sri Lanka? What do we need to know in order to understand the kind of work that you do there?
Okay, so Sri Lanka is it's a beautiful tiny island right below India, just like you said. It has multiple, ethnicities and religions that we have in the country. To understand the work I do, I think one main thing that I would say is that we have 650,000 more women in the country than men. So it's a huge, it's a big female population that we have in the country. And I mean, it's a country with almost 21 million people. And it's a very small island, I would say. I think it's little less than half the size of Iowa. And we have 21 million people living there. And we also have a lot of young people. Out of the 21, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we have around 4.5 million young people between the ages of 15 and 29. So those are the main things that I would say you have to know.
And how does it happen that there are so many more women than men?
I don't know. It has been so for quite some time. I mean, we have had very prominent and eminent women in the country. So we don't necessarily have, you know, sex selective abortions,
right.
Or we don't... I don't want to draw comparisons, but
right.
We don't, women in this country, they have strong women. We have strong women, so.
Okay. And so your work is preventing gender violence.
Gender-based violence, that's
gender-based
right.
violence. So can you explain what you've been up to in this year and a half since you came, returned home?
All right. So the United Nations Population Fund, the country office in Sri Lanka, they started this program called the Social Change Entrepreneur. And I decided to apply, and I got into the program. It was a competitive selection process, as I hear, and after I got into the program, I was given the opportunity of developing an initiative of my own, which would fit into the mandate of the United Nations Population Fund. So if I had to talk a little bit about the mandate, they work on women and youth health as well as rights. When I say health, they mainly work on sexual and reproductive health of women and young people. So I got the opportunity of designing whatever initiative that I wanted. And I must say the country representative, Alan, was very supportive to give us the opportunity and say, you know, you should run with it. You should do what you are passionate and what would the country need. So that's how I thought, you know, gender-based violence is something we hear, we see. Sometimes people consider it as a norm. Some people don't see it as a problem. So I thought this is the topic that I have to address, especially among youth in the country, because we have such a big youth population and that is where change can be made. So, yeah, that's how the campaign came about.
And it is called 100 Voices, your campaign,
yeah.
Your initiative. Can you explain more what that means?
Okay, so this is a question that I've been getting very much. Why 100 voices? Why not 1,000? Why I said 100 voices is because, of course, it's a symbolic number. The reason why I said 100 was because before I started planning the main initiative, I had a couple of youth consultations with young men and women. And I always ask them how many are, whether they are active on social media. And they all say that they are very active on social media. And then I ask them, how many friends do you have on Facebook or in other platforms of social media? And I would say almost all of them. I have not heard anyone who says they have under 100 friends. So I said, if you have 100 friends on your social media and if you're very active there, maybe that would be a platform where you can use to voice and advocate against gender-based violence. So 100 Voices started off as a social media campaign and it evolved into policy advocacy too. So the idea behind it was that every young person would have at least 100 friends online or offline that they could impact.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Thank you.
Changing an entire culture, changing something that is deeply rooted in tradition and conventional ways of thinking, that must be a huge mountain to move. How do you go about, I mean, what kind of challenges have you faced?
The biggest challenge is that although people know about gender-based violence, they have heard about it, they would have faced it, they don't want to acknowledge it. They don't want to know the root cause of it. They don't want to talk about what sex and gender is. They don't want to talk about stereotyping. So the main challenge, the biggest challenge that I faced was for youth to talk, to start, you know, talking about it. And for them to learn more about it. And, you know, it's a topic that you don't necessarily want to talk in the open air. It would be a very secretive topic that you would talk, you know, maybe among your very close family or friends. But what I wanted to do was, you know, speak about it openly so that you will learn more about it and you will also educate other people about what gender-based violence is. And in my opinion, education is the only way that you can, you know, address these issues short-term and also in the long run.
That's interesting that it's, on the one hand, it's very almost a norm, but at the same time, it's sort of a hidden part of the culture.
I wouldn't say, you know, it's not... I don't want to draw comparisons between countries, but, you know, if I had to, one would say that, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, it doesn't happen as often as country X or country Y faces it. But
right.
What I thought was, I mean, you don't have to wait until you draw comparisons between countries.
You don't have to be the worst.
Exactly. So why not address it right now? Without waiting until it's, you know, difficult mm-hmm. to address.
And I imagine young men are very valuable allies in your work.
Absolutely. I have had a lot of young men who have joined with me with the campaign because I work with multiple youth networks in the country. And there are a lot of young men who are very interested, very eager, very enthusiastic to be part of the program. So I think that's a very good sign.
And what other signs of progress or hope do you see?
You know, after I started the campaign, because the campaign, I don't want it to be time bound. And I wanted other youth networks to take up the initiative and run with it. And we have already had three major youth networks coming in to take up the initiative and do their own work against gender-based violence. So we have had a international design campus in Sri Lanka, voicing against gender-based violence through art and design. And then we have another youth network which has come together to do island-wide workshops and trainings in schools and communities against gender-based violence. We have another program, another student initiative, which is again, speaking against gender-based violence through multiple media like theater, through art and design, through workshops. So it's progressing quite steady, I would say.
And this is a program, 100 Voices, aimed at youth. But have you seen any impact on the older generations?
So 100 Voices is mainly to engage youth in voicing against violence. But I have to say I have had a lot of support by the older generation, if I had to say. And the campaign also focuses on advocating for policy changes, national policy changes, because we have had youth dialogues with a lot of young people to get their perspectives on how to address violence in the policies, how we can address violence through the policies. And I have to say the consultations I've been having with, you know, government officials and other officials have been very successful, and they're not necessarily young. So they understand the importance of bringing in youth to address this issue.
Well, that's very encouraging, yeah, because changing laws is very important in the whole process. You went, Onali, you went so quickly from graduating from Iowa State University just in 2014,
yeah,
spring of 2014, to here, making such a big difference in your country. And I'm sure people would love to know, how did you make the most of your experience at Iowa State? How did that happen, that you were able to go from a college student to a social change entrepreneur?
Well, I have to say, Iowa State really prepared me to become a social change entrepreneur. The experience I had as a international student, as an international student leader on campus, made a very big difference to who I am today. And it is, I always tell this to a lot of people I know, I have to say that Dr. Jane, who teaches at Iowa State, made, you know, the best of me.
Dr. Jane Dusselier.
That's right. And
history professor.
That's right.
Who was not able to be with us today,
yeah,
unfortunately.
But I think she made a very big difference in my life to actually, you know, to realize the true potential that I have. So Iowa State played a very, very big role in, you know, molding me to be who I am today.
Can you say more about Dr. Jane?
She, you know, it was her globalization and human conditions class that really opened my eyes, because there was one question she asked the whole class. What is that one thing you want to change in the world? I mean, it's a very deep question where I think not many students really understood. I didn't understand that in the first go. But the more I thought of that question, what is that one thing that I want to change in the world? I started to realize that my passion was in education. And when I say education, it's not just you know, school education or curriculum development. What I was passionate was for to make a change among youth in what they educate themselves on. And that is why this campaign came about too, because it educates young people about what these current prevailing social issues in terms of gender-based violence. So Dr. Jane and her globalization and human conditions class made a very big difference in my life.
It's interesting you chose the words what the youth educate themselves on. You are interested in the self-generated kind of learning.
That's true. That's right. Because one thing I strongly believe is that there are certain lessons in life that cannot be taught. You have to learn it by yourself. And that is something I learned from my experience at Iowa State. Because Iowa State gave me the experience where it's not only the classroom lectures that I learned from, it was everything else as well.
Yes, you were a very active participant in the international community, which I've just been learning about a little bit more this year as a reporter.
Yeah.
There are so many countries represented by really the finest young minds and hearts of those countries.
That's right.
And here they are all at Iowa State. And
it's an amazing experience because, you know, you get so many young people coming from multiple different countries, diverse backgrounds. And when you actually look at these student organizations, irrespective of what differences they have, they still work together to, you know, it can be to organize events or to work on a social project. It could be in class or through student organizations, but they work together. And that is something that, you know, Iowa State, I think, has achieved because it gives students the platform to, you know, forget about their differences and work together, you know, to understand, to tolerate differences, to understand them and to embrace the different identities. I think that is amazing.
And so those are some of the experiences that really changed you and
Absolutely.
Shaped you and gave you confidence.
Absolutely.
Clearly. Well, there was another experience in your life that I understand made a very huge impact in your experience. And this was the 2004 tsunami that in the Indian Ocean, a horrific storm that was later compared to Typhoon Haiyan, a more recent one in the Philippines. Can you narrate what happened?
Yeah, so the tsunami, we were, my whole family with two other families were on our way to, on a pilgrimage, pilgrim trip.
And you were just a girl.
Yeah. I was very young. I think I was 13. And yeah, so we never heard of anything called a tsunami, or we never heard that, you know, the the ocean could come into the land. And we were on a trip, and we were quite close to the ocean, but we were inside the city, so we were not really on the beach even. And this big wave came in and just swept the van that I was in with my mom and my sister and my cousin brother. When my dad was actually, he witnessed the whole process of us drowning inside the van. The van got submerged, and my dad saw everything happening with his own eyes. So the van that we were in, it was dragged away with the wave. I still remember how the van got filled with water inside. So from my, you know, toes to my knees, to my waist, to my chest, to my shoulders, till my nose, water filled in inside the van. And for some reason, I don't know how, we were able to break out, break the window of the van, and we were right in the water. So we got washed away for quite a long time. Yeah.
So how did that is just an amazing experience, and how did that affect you, or how did that change?
Well, you know, that was a very big life-changing experience, because, you know, it's not many people survived in that specific area. It was one of the worst affected in the country. And, I mean, I saw with my own eyes dead bodies and all that. So having gone through that experience, it made me realize that going through difficult times, physically, mentally, emotionally, it doesn't last for a long time. You just have to realize that you are going through a difficult time, and you have to, you know, tell yourself that you will overcome it, because my whole family was shattered. None of us died, but, it was a very traumatic experience. And we still told each other that we can get through it. And we did. My sister does not remember most parts of the tsunami. My mom and my dad remembers everything, almost everything. And I remember everything that happened. But that has made me stronger to understand and to know that, you know what? There are difficult times. There are hard times that we all face. But there's always a solution and a way to get out of it.
Well, Onali Ariyabandhu from Sri Lanka, a social change entrepreneur from the UN Population Fund. She'll be speaking tonight at 8 p.m. in the Sunroom of Memorial Union. What a wonderful gift it is to have you back in Ames and sharing your latest achievements.
Thank you.
With the student body, who I'm sure will be inspired.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me here. And I hope to see all the listeners at Sunroom tonight.
Okay. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. Today we heard of everything from the local to the global and even to the planetary. Our first guest was Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, who gave us an update of all that we can look forward to in Ames in the month of October. You can visit the website visitames.com to hear more about the events that she sped through, because there are so many. We are also joined by Onali Ariyabandhu, a social change entrepreneur by the United Nations Population Fund, who will be speaking tonight at 8 at Memorial Union about combating gender-based violence in Sri Lanka and her social media campaign to make that happen among youth. And thank you to Molly Helmers and Cara Spiato at ISU Lectures for helping us get connected, as well as to Dr. Jane Dusselier. In addition, we covered the Eid al-Adha celebration this past weekend at the Darul Arkam Islamic Center in Ames. Special thanks to Nadia Abdelazim, Vicky Kamfila Nuvang, Nerman Sabri, and our friend Hend for their kind assistance. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest and Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. If you like the show, tell your friends. This show airs again at noon and 7 p.m. and can be streamed live from our webpage, khoifm.org, or anytime later in the day, just go to the Listen Now link on our webpage and look for Local Talk. We'll also post a podcast along with pictures and relevant links to contacts by the end of the day, thanks to Ron Carson, our webmaster. As always, your role as listener and your generous contributions are what keep us going here at KHOI Community Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.